Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Bureau in La Crosse. Thank you very much for tuning in. Today's program is going to be dedicated to the conversation that, most of us have been having in all of our either workplaces or homes and across the country, which involves the death of George Floyd at the hands of police and the aftermath of that and the demonstrations that have been going on, the cries of Black Lives Matter, and the efforts in our communities to find ways to work better together to avoid things like this in the future. I'm joined by two guests. Thomas Harris, whom you've heard on this program before, is the Assistant Director of the Office of Multicultural Student Services at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. Thomas, thank you very much for joining us again.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Also with me today, Shondell Spivey, who's been on this program before, I believe, before my time. He is a member of the La Crosse School Board. He is the co-founder of an organization called BLACK, which stands for Black Leaders Acquiring Collective Knowledge. He's also the 2019 recipient of the Martin Luther King Jr. Leadership Award. Shondell, thank you for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
As we get into this conversation, we'll get more into the specifics, what was going through your mind when you found out about George Floyd's death and some of these other things. But I just want to put the moment in context, because this program, Newsmakers, is about what's going on in the Cooley region and the Driftless area, including what goes on here in La Crosse. And so talk about, Shondell, let's start with you. What does this moment in time mean for La Crosse and more broadly for southwestern Wisconsin?
I think it means that in this time, it's a time of waking up, essentially. It's a time of recognizing that you can no longer and shall no longer be silent about issues of injustice and racism, systematic racism, oppression, discrimination, all of those things. It has happened far too long, far too often, and people are tired, quite frankly.
Thomas, what would you add to that? What does this moment mean for our community?
I think for me, I think it's different for each individual, but from where I stand and being here for so long and in the community and seeing these kinds of things that happened to Mr. Floyd over the years, I think here in our community, in our region, I think it provides an opportunity where people across the world, across the nation, in Wisconsin, in La Crosse, in the Cooley region, have seen this and actually saw it happen. There was no gun. It happened in plain sight where the air was squished out of Mr. Floyd until he became dead. And that's an automatic invitation to invite people in for opportunities to make change happen and want to do that. At least that's what I'm hoping for. So very negative situation. The pot has been boiled over. Now it's time to come together to work on some things to improve things for the future.
And I know that you've been involved in that effort of communicating about issues of race with people who haven't always been willing to accept that those conditions exist. As you see more and more people kind of waking up to these issues, what are those conversations like for you? Do you feel like the issue's gaining more traction finally?
I don't know. There's a lot to that question. let's see. I would say staying in the category of opportunities. There have been many, many opportunities in our community and across the region, and there will be more for people to participate in discussions, to join in community book reads, regional reads, to go to programs, to be more prepared and to kind of provide some of that self-education that provides perspective about self. And where do you stand individually about this to make you think about how you also stand in the organizations that you're in, and how do you stand in the community, and what's going to be your individual and community actions that you might take. And then you should recognize, if you don't take any actions, you should recognize that too. But I think there are opportunities out here for people to take advantage of.
Shondell, if you don't mind me asking, what were the thoughts that were going through your mind when you first found out about George Floyd's death at the hands of police?
I was angry. I was mortified, hurt, so many emotions, right? Because the reality of it is that this isn't new. This isn't something new that has happened. It's been killing of unarmed black people, you know, for the last several years. And we've protested and we've marched and we've cried out and we've come up with solutions and various resolves and so on and so forth. So to have it happen again, right? And then if you even look at it from the standpoint of not even just George Floyd, but then you also have Breonna Taylor, and others that have recently lost their lives as well due to racist actions and overuse of police force and so on and so forth. So it hurts. And what it does is, and for many, and not to speak for all black people, but for many people, what it did is it reopened wounds, right? It's kind of like this healing process. You go through this healing process after each time a racist incident happens, each time a microaggression happens, and then you have these major incidents that just continuously reopens all of those wounds. So when you hear about George Floyd, you then also have to think about Sandra Bland, right? Alton Sterling. You have to think about Eric Gardner, Mike Brown, and it just keeps flooding you with all these reminders of how many black lives have been lost due to police brutality or due to white racism.
It's not lost on me that I mean, I'm sitting here talking to the two of you about this and asking you, and you've been very gracious to agree to have this conversation with me, and I appreciate it very much. And so I don't know if I'm contributing to the problem here or not, but like it's not lost on me that a lot of what we do in moments like this is that we look to African American people to tell us how to use these circumstances to make things better. And yet it almost seems unfair. Do you think that's a fair thing to do to in the moment of this collective grief of your people to ask for us to ask you to contextualize this for us and say how do we be better as a society and as a community?
So for me, I look at it from a standpoint, and I've mentioned this in other conversations as well, is that white folks do not need black people's permission to handle the issue of racism. Will we all serve a better purpose if we're collective and having the conversation and doing the work? Yes. But the reality of it is that racism is a white people's problem. Racism was created, and people may disagree, but racism was created by white people. Therefore, white people need to relearn, and do what they need to do to be able to dismantle this system of white supremacy and racism. And for me, like, yes, I think it's important to bring in other individuals, right, racially diverse individuals into the conversation just to ensure that you don't mess something up. But the reality of it is I think that people have, particularly white folks, have a way of being able to exploit, so to speak, the voice of black people. And not saying that, at least you give the option, right? Give the option of, do you want to speak? Do you want to be heard? Do you want your voice heard on whatever platform? But sometimes what happens is white folks take the grief, right? And the silence of like, I need time to process. We need time to process and deal with our emotions before we can speak out. Maybe we want to come in an organized manner, et cetera, et cetera. But what happens is folks then feel like they can speak for or on behalf of Black people. And I don't think you need to speak. White people need to speak for or on behalf of Black people. They just need to speak to the issue of racism. How do you, as a white person, stop being racist? How do you, as a white person, challenge systems and dismantle systems that are racist or perpetuates racism or perpetuates white supremacist ideology in any way, shape, or form? That's how white people can get involved with that work.
So you're talking about racism as a white person's problem. You're talking about like the systemic racism that we've been talking about that is set into our power structures and all that sort of thing. On an individual level, every individual can have individual prejudices one way or another, and so I think sometimes there's some confusion among people because our society has for a long time used those words prejudiced and racist interchangeably, but in this particular kind of context, those aren't really interchangeable terms, are they? They're very separate things.
Right, yeah. Because when we speak racism, we talk prejudice plus power. So like everybody has their prejudice, right? Like everybody has their, you know, quorum with whoever. But then the reality is you have to look at who has the power to be able to take their prejudice and implement laws and policies and procedures and systems that perpetuates that that prejudice, which then becomes a way of enacting racism. So I look at it from the standpoint of there's a systematic racism, then there's a social racism, right? There's a racism between individuals, and then there's a whole system that allows for, again, those prejudices to be perpetuated.
Thomas, as you work with the Office of Multicultural Student Services, and you've also been part of various community conversations. And Shondell, I know you've been involved in this kind of work too. But Thomas, as people are having conversations in the community, they're reading books, they're getting together in groups, they're talking about this. What kind of language or resources are tools that people should be using to have these conversations about race with one another if they're not sure where to begin?
Particularly for white folks, I know that our regional REIT, which is going to be moved a year forward because of COVID, is the book called Waking Up White. And that book was chosen because everybody's at a different place with issues of race and knowledge of race and experience with race. And we thought that would cover people at the beginning as well as people in the middle, and people who are really advanced, if there's such a thing, would be able to understand why we were taking this strategy. So that might be a way to start, since we're using that book in our region. They can get those books at the library. There'll be some other ways to get it that they'll hear about in the near future. I want to share something in relationship to what Shondell said.
I think
the best, one of the best medicines is to not be caught in these situations where it's always a tragic situation or an emergency situation or a situation of trauma. I think with our community being so white dominated and our organizations being so white dominated, many anyway, is we gotta be working towards creating and changing organizations where they have people of color that are part of them. And there's a lens, even from the white folks, who says, okay, so what does this mean for Black people when we make this policy or when we implement this procedure and we have these kind of guidelines? What does that mean, seeing that we're all white already, but at the same time, what does this mean if the situation is working and also is trying to protect, or whatever the verb may be, in relationship to people of color in our community? It might be best for white people just to own up and say racism, because that's what this country was built on. People of color didn't count as nothing. We were the laborers We were the people who built things, who built the nation, and the white folks, particularly white, male-owning males, benefited from, and that's what was valued. And because of that, I like to see maybe a perspective of working more with white folks who owns up that racism is in the air, it's in the water, it's in us. So we don't have to deal with the issue is racism in our community. Hell yes, in our community, and it's across the region. I'm learning that I feel more comfortable working with people that way as opposed to somebody saying, is this racist? I've come to terms that it's easier to work that way with white folks.
That's Thomas Harris. He's the assistant director of the Office of Multicultural Student Services at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. I'm also speaking with Shondell Spivey, who is the co-founder of Black. That's Black Leaders Acquiring Collective Knowledge. I am grateful for their time and eager to continue our conversation. A quick time out here on Newsmakers. Let me tell you that you can find more information about our show on our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. The program continues in just a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Bureau in La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us today. I'm talking this segment with Thomas Harris, the Assistant Director of the Office of Multicultural Student Services at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, and Shondell Spivey, who is a member of the La Crosse School Board, the recipient of the 2019 Martin Luther King Jr. Leadership Award, and the co-founder of Black Leaders Acquiring Collective Knowledge, a local nonprofit. I'd like to thank both of them for continuing our conversation today. And just a heads up for our audience, this portion of the conversation includes unedited language about race, including the N-word, that might not be appropriate for every listener. If that's you, go ahead and take a break, tune out, and then come back in about 12 minutes. I want to get in to some of the specifics of what it's like for African Americans living in our community, in La Crosse, throughout the Coulee region, throughout the Driftless area. We're seeing a lot of conflict in other cities resulting in some pretty fierce altercations between members of the African American community and their supporters and the people who are out in the streets protesting and police officers. Talk a little bit about what that relationship is like here in La Crosse. I don't know, Thomas, would you like to start on that?
For me, I've been here close to 30 years. I live in Stoddard, which is 10 or 12 miles south of La Crosse. Right now, there was a time when I lived in La Crosse probably for about, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 years or so. I left the community and came back, so I'm out there. I think for me, it's fluctuated over time. It's been different at different times. And the longer that I've been here and the longer that I've been at the university, I've learned that I needed to work with the community more, because if I just stayed on campus and worked with my students, particularly students of color that I work with just on campus, that's not good enough, because they shop. You know, they go to the bars, they go to the restaurants, their families do too. People are visiting, and they're part of the overall community. So we got to improve the community and keep an eye on the community as well as the UWL environment. So I've served on committees and been part of meetings with the police chief over the years, as well as with the police department. So that's been me. When I first got here as a graduate student way back in 1988, 89, someplace right there, and I was a student coming from Stevens Point, and I had my times. There was a time when I got stopped 3 times in one day, you know. So if that happened to me then, I'm thinking Yes, that's very possible for somebody today. I remember going into a bar on the south side, and when I was working, a matter of fact, I think the day before I was in a meeting with police, and then I go into this bar because I'm a pool shooter, and somebody said to me, "No niggers in here. You get the hell out of here." You know, I finished my drink and I did leave. And then I got in touch with Steve O'Malley, who's still at La Crosse County. And he ended up speaking to the owner of that bar and some changes were made. You know, so what I'm saying is, if it can happen to me, it can happen to other folks and so on. What's going on now is a microcosm and a built up of things that could happen over time.
Shondell, let me bring you into this part of the conversation. Talk about your experience, because the way I understand it, you've lived in La Crosse for a shorter period of time than Thomas has. What are your observations about living in La Crosse as an African-American, the relationship with the police, with the government, that sort of thing?
I'm going to say it's completely similar. I've been in La Crosse for about 13 years. I can recall the very first time I moved to La Crosse. I was a student at UWL, and I was here for the ASI program. And myself and two other black men went into a restaurant. And to, you know, make a long story short, essentially, we could hear a lot of noise coming out of that restaurant. And then we walked into that restaurant, and it was dead silent, nothing but white folks, and everybody looked at the door. And it was probably one of the most uninviting moments I think I've had in my life. It was really, it might seem very subtle, but it really was telling about the community and the area that we were moving into. I served on a human rights commission. And as I was on a human rights commission, we did a listening session for the black community specifically. And I mean, there was a long laundry list of stories about how people felt unwelcome, how they experienced racism from various entities and businesses and structures here in the La Crosse area. I remember being here and having a group of black students in Black Student Unity at UW La Crosse had a kickball game at Myrick Park, and trucks drove by and yelled the words niggers or, you know, and things like that. So it can be from subtle things to very overt things. You know, something as subtle as a truck driving around with a huge-ass Confederate flag, right? Those things incite, that incites black people, right? When you think of the history of what the Confederate flags mean for black and brown bodies, it's not something that's welcoming to the community. And so there's an array of issues, you know. I remember having to address issues with the housing authority, having to address issues. Folks talked about, you know, having issues with various police officers. And granted, like, no one's, you know, getting shot at it, but at the same time, we all, you know, there's folks in position of power that hold racial bias. We have to address those so that everybody can feel like they are welcome here, they can be successful and thrive in this community, and most importantly, feel respected and appreciated in a community like this.
So let me ask each of you then, what can city leaders do in, let's just take La Crosse since that is where the station is located, and it's the largest metropolitan area here. What can city leaders do in La Crosse to address these issues, to make sure that the African-American community is included in decision-making processes and that actions are taken when they express concerns? Let's start with you, Shondell.
So for me, it's going to be one, examining of self, right? Like, people in positions of power, people that are, you know, those leadership positions need to truly examine and see if they truly understand and believe in, right, the fact that racism exists in this community, that racism exists in this world, and oppression and discrimination is real. So that's like the first thing you got to do, is really grapple with yourself and understand that concept and accept that reality, because it is a reality. And then the other piece of it, I think, is they need to explore and understand the policies, procedures, the laws, right? Like, some way, shape, or form. Like, there are laws that uphold this racist and white supremacist ideology, and we have to be willing to address those policies and procedures. And from a workplace standpoint, all the way up into a federal level. And so this community has to address that, because even thinking about, you know, a worker, you know, if I work at a certain place, I shouldn't have to question whether or not my supervisor is racist, right? Like, if they're treating me some sort of way because of my black skin. And that's just minute, right? But then I'm going to step up and say, and dare to be bold and say, challenge also the landmarks in which we created. Who are these landmarks named after? When people research these individuals, are these going to be individuals that, you know, truly were pillars in this community? Or are they going to be individuals that were racist, white supremacists, right? So even looking at that from a standpoint, you know, we have this, well, I won't go into the statue, but we all know what the argument is around the statue. But we really have to start looking in and talking to communities, racially diverse communities, and recognizing that we see things that aren't welcoming in this area. We see racist, white supremacist ideology continuously perpetuated in many different forms. And those people in positions of power need to make it their responsibility that they're responding to their constituents of racially diverse backgrounds.
Thomas, what about you in terms of actions that the city could take to make sure that the voices and concerns of African-American residents are addressed? What needs to happen next?
Yeah, I don't think it's just a governmental thing. I definitely think governmental areas should be included and be a part of that process. But I also think that many of the community organizations should be connected to that. Black would be a good example, and the Greater La Crosse Diversity Council, maybe some people working with Waking Up White regional effort, that kind of thing. But for me, two things that really are apparent to me, and then one is an idea. I'll give the idea first. First thing, anybody who works probably for any business, but particularly for La Crosse County, City of La Crosse, any other governmental agency, to me, maybe add one requirement as our expectation of being an employee is that you must serve on some kind of social justice or some kind of racial justice effort or organization as a volunteer kind of thing, but it's not going to be volunteer in this situation. And make that part of their job effort. People are looking for things to get involved with. Other people aren't looking for things to get involved with. This is a way to capture both of those two things. And then I also think that I had mentioned this before, the whole having a multicultural or a racialized lens in decision-making, and this is in connection to what Shondell was talking about in relationship to policies, guidelines, and procedures, that's part of the puzzle. To me, there should be some key leaders from our community who are people of color who are part of that process. And I think that we should be paid for it. It should be part of the process that has to happen, particularly knowing that we're so white dominated right now. We're being asked to do this to help, and we want to help, and we want to see change happen. But at the same time, it perpetuates the white privilege of people being in positions of power who are white, who are part of the systematic system by itself. So those are the two things that really, really come to mind that might be a little bit different, but it's very direct, it's very simple, but at the same time, for white people, it's going to be very difficult because of their white privilege.
Well, I certainly think we could do show after show on this, and we certainly will address these issues on future programs, but our time for today is drawing to a close. I certainly want to appreciate both of you for joining us under during a period of difficult emotions. And I appreciate your perspective and willingness to share openly with us today. Shaundell Spivey is a member of the La Crosse School Board. He's a past recipient of the MLK Leadership Award and the founder, the co-founder of Black. That's Black Leaders Acquiring Collective Knowledge. Thomas Harris is the Assistant Director of the Office of Multicultural Student Services at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. I thank you both very much for joining us today on Newsmakers.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Ezra.
Absolutely. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. In a moment, our conversation with La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot. If you'd like to find out more about our program, you can visit our website. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios. Thank you for listening today, and we've been talking about the George Floyd killing and its aftermath, protests throughout Wisconsin, both peaceful and otherwise. In La Crosse, several protests have happened, and in surrounding areas as well, and most of them without very much incident. Joining us now to talk about that and some policy issues that are being considered as a result, Mayor Tim Cabot of La Crosse. Mr. Mayor, thank you very much for joining us again on Newsmakers.
Thank you, Ezra.
So in the aftermath of George Floyd's killing, we've seen an uprising from the African-American community, from many leaders, white and black and otherwise, decrying the murder of George Floyd and calling on our society to do better in the future. Where is La Crosse's appropriate place in this conversation, do you think?
Well, I think we are definitely a part of that. It's going on all over the country, of course, and we are part of, you know, part of this world. So it is something that we are actively listening and taking very seriously. I do feel that the what happened to George Floyd and that just awful, appalling murder that spark did, you know, was caused by police action and inaction. But really what's going on here in La Crosse and all across the country is more related to the systemic racism that that we face, and that's all throughout our communities and our institutions. So we are, as I said, actively listening and actively trying to understand, as well as working on ways to fix the situation. So it's not only with our La Crosse Police Department, but it's really across many of our departments that are actively working on neighborhood revitalization here in our community and in our entire organization when it comes to transparency and working with our community to make our place better.
La Crosse does not have a history of the racial unrest, I think, that we've seen in other areas. And so a lot of people look at that and say, hey, we've had successful race relations over the years, but I know just from the climate growing up and the things that I heard and saw and hearing the experiences now many years after the fact of some others, that while La Crosse has typically had a generally peaceful existence with people of its white and racial minority populations, that existence hasn't always been warm. It hasn't always been welcoming. So what needs to be going on in our community to change that and to make the minority residents in La Crosse, particularly African Americans, feel more like full-fledged members of our community?
Well, and I think you raise some good points there. I mean, we might not have the history of some places, but believe me, the stories that I hear and the conversations I have, especially with people of color, is that we do have that racist past and it's going on today. Again, as the speakers talked about last night in Riverside Park, it's maybe not as obvious as some other ways that people have expressed racism, but There are many, many ways, racism is happening everywhere. It's just done differently. And so here in La Crosse, we've had our share and we continue to try to work on addressing that. For us, and this is now a few years ago as mayor, I think it really starts with a recognition that this has happened and is happening in our community. We issued a proclamation, and actually I was joined by former Mayor John Menninger a few years ago, signing a proclamation that talked about La Crosse in our past and apologized for our past as really that first step. And, I think it's important to offer that apology as a first step. And we did that. And since that time, working with our community, we formed the city's Human Rights Commission to really provide that outreach and connection. And they did a number of listening sessions over the years to have opportunities to listen to our citizens of color and to understand what has happened and what's going on. So that's been the effort over the last several years. And then, especially with these most recent issues involving police, the idea of having more citizen input and oversight of our police department, especially when it comes to trainings and it comes to the policies and procedures and accountability, we're looking at some changes and some policy and legislation to help move that along. So I think, again, the focus being on the police in many communities right now, here in La Crosse, we're really trying to be comprehensive and to look at what's going on in our community when it comes to housing and job opportunities and ownership of businesses by Black people and Indigenous and people of color. What can we do to help support more of that ownership and growth in those businesses and job opportunities? What can we do as an organization to be more transparent and to really find ways to meaningfully engage people that might have a lot of mistrust or are just, they don't feel necessarily safe in participating in our process the way it's structured right now. So we're looking for ways to change those processes and make them more accommodating and more engaging so that everybody feels comfortable, contacting their city government and identifying issues and then working towards solutions.
One thing that the city is doing starting this week, there was an update to the police department's website. It now includes a transparency section. Can you talk a little bit in general terms about what that effort was all about and what you're hoping to accomplish with that?
The vast majority of credit really goes to our police chief, Sean Coudron, and his team there in the police department. He is still a relatively a new chief here, and one of his primary goals on becoming chief was to improve the transparency of the department and sharing that with the community. So that was actually something that he and his team were working on last year, and we're ready to almost launch that site when COVID-19 hit us. And unfortunately, some of those other issues got just because of the attention having to be shifted to the pandemic. But he was able to get that launched. And it's really intended as just what it says. It's really to provide a look into the La Crosse Police Department. And again, what does that mean for the training that they do, the standards and practices for how they go about their duties, including arrests and use of force, how they are, spending the tax dollars and their budgets and their personnel, how they work to build relationships with the community through their efforts at community policing and our neighborhood resource officers. So that website is really intended to provide a look into the department. And what we're going to be doing as far as taking a step even further beyond that is to engage our citizens and to create a citizen advisory board, which will help us to evaluate that training and those standards and to improve upon and adopt practices that will keep everybody safe. And that's, again, the police department deserves a lot of credit for that. And we're going to continue working with the community on evaluating and improving those training and those standards.
We're speaking with Mayor Tim Cabot today on Newsmakers, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment. For more about today's program or to offer a suggestion for a future show or to ask a question that you'd like us to find an answer to, you can visit our website. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios. We're joined today by Mayor Tim Cabot of La Crosse, and we've been talking about our cities and our area's reaction to the George Floyd killing and the protests that have resulted against systemic racial bias inherent in some of our political systems and governmental systems, and what can be done about that. Speaking of the protests that have been going on, very quickly before we get into some of it, I know that Mrs. Cabot was attending one of the protests and was injured there. Is she doing all right?
Thank you. Yes, she's doing better. I think even after a few days, she was still washing pepper spray or whatever that material was out of her hair and whatnot. But she's doing better physically. I think she's still a little bit shell-shocked because of just how horrendous it was of what happened and the whole incident. But thank you. Yes, she's doing better.
Good news. Good news. And it was, I'm not sure if that was the day or the next day, but you, at one of the protests, you were presented with a list of questions that protesters asked you, a list of five of them. I'm not going to go exhaustively through the entire list of questions right now, but I thought we could take a moment and just hit a couple of them. Some of them would be addressed by our discussion about the transparency portion of the police's website. The one question was how you'll increase transparency. Another one is about ensuring transparency in the planning process of future rules and those kinds of things. One question that I wanted to address, because this is, we haven't seen this in La Crosse, but in a lot of communities, you're seeing some really, really what appear to be brutal tactics in reducing protesters. It's sometimes even video of police loading up medical supplies and water and other humanitarian resources that protesters have supplied themselves, loading them up in trucks and hauling them away, or, you know, other things like that. So I think question four is particularly relevant. How will you continue to protect La Crosse's residents' right to protest?
Well, I mean, first off, it is that's part of our fundamental rights as American citizens, and the Bill of Rights, that freedom to petition your government, the freedom to assemble, the freedom for speech, and so we believe wholeheartedly in that and support that strongly. Our police department has, again, through extensive training and their policies and practices, and then as they are working on these events, the planning and coordination that goes into these is very extensive, all with the focus on allowing, or not allowing, but really to provide for a safe and peaceful protest and safe and peaceful exercise of free speech and for people to petition their government. So, they demonstrate that through the efforts and how they go about. One of the things that we worked on with the event that happened yesterday was just close coordination with the organizers to understand the march route, to understand where you know, people were going to be gathering and speaking, and to do everything in their power to help keep that those areas as well as the march route safe. And they did that very well last night. And you know, I have to thank both the organizers of the event and the police department for the communication and coordination. That's really what it's been, I think, probably in just about every location around the country where there have been peaceful protests, and that coordination between the organizers of the marches and the cities where those are happening, that communication is critical, because we can do things as a city when it comes to diverting traffic and making sure that there aren't conflicts between cars and people as much as possible. You know, that's what we really try to do. Where things get challenging, of course, is if the marchers, you know, go off of the route and go into other areas, or if there are folks there that are just simply not intent on having a peaceful protest but want to cause other problems, you know, that's where it gets difficult. Luckily, we have not witnessed that here in La Crosse. The protests have all been peaceful, and I know that there has been some frustrations from drivers at times because intersections have been blocked, and that's what happened in my wife's case, where a driver was frustrated and felt like he had the right to assault somebody, basically. But the police department does everything they can to try to work with the events to keep that to keep that safe, and we do here as well. So this is not, you know, these have not been the first marches that or protest gatherings that the city has experienced. I mean, those things happen every year. You know, there's multiple issues that happen, and we really try to go out of our way to keep the people safe without being active participants in the actual event.
Is there one thing that in terms of race relations, in terms of making La Crosse a more welcoming place for minorities, particularly for African Americans, is there one thing in particular that you can think of that needs the most attention? One area that kind of needs the most work?
Well, I am reflecting on the messages that I heard at Riverside Park from the speakers who talked about the need, you know, especially for white citizens, you know, to listen and to try to understand without necessarily responding, but to really listen and to understand the stories and the experiences of our Black, Indigenous, and people of color that live here. So I think that's a real key starting point, but it's also the idea of speaking up and speaking out when there is racism that's happening. And that racism, as we said earlier, it happens everywhere. It just takes different forms. It happens in different ways, and that we really have to be paying attention and on guard for those types of maybe you know, more subtle forms of racism. And then I think the other piece that again resonated with me was just the idea that you know, we have to work hard here in city government on not only transparency but on coming up with ways where people feel comfortable in providing input in the different formats and different ways to engage people.
We've been speaking with the La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot today on Newsmakers. Mayor Cabot, thank you very much for joining me again.
Thank you, Ezra.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to listen to this conversation again, you can find it on our website. That's where you can stream on demand all the episodes of our show. Just go to wpr.org/newsmakers. If you'd like to subscribe to the program, you can open your favorite podcasting platform, search for Newsmakers, and hit subscribe there. I'd appreciate it very much if you did that. Thanks today to my producer, John Davis, and I hope you tune in next time for another Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio.